Cohen, welcome back to Radio Times. Philadelphia School Superintendent William Hite just announced his action plan for the school district. He's been on the job for about 4 months and is overseeing a system that has lost thousands of students to a growing number of charter schools in the city over the years. His blueprint has two major goals. One is to improve academics and achievement from early childhood education through high school. The other is to put the district on a more secure financial footing. It faces a shortfall of more than $1 billion if it cannot rein in spending or better manage its resources. Superintendent Hite has called for the closure of dozens of schools because of the numbers of empty seats, saying that millions could be saved and be put to better use. We asked William Hite to join us on Radio Times. Throughout his career in education, he's been a teacher, he's been a principal, a central office administrator, and prior to coming to Philadelphia, he was superintendent of Prince George's County Public Schools in Maryland. And William Hite, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Monty. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. We've been tracking you for a couple of months now, so we're happy to have you in the studio. I have to say, you're not the first superintendent who has sat across from me offering a plan to improve the achievement, the academic performance of public schools students. There have been mixed results in the past. I would say some incremental successes, but not the achievement that these bold superintendents offered. How is your plan different?
Plan is different because in an environment where we are starved for resources, we have to prioritize our work. And this plan is meant to communicate to everyone who works in our district those things that are extremely important to the outcomes of our students. Naturally, we are concerned about their educational outcomes, but equally important is our ability to operate within our financial means. And so we have to do one in order to get to the other. And so part of this, the release of this plan, was to communicate to staff that if, in fact, we're going to prioritize our work, we want the priorities around these things that we feel are most important.
And what are those top priorities then?
The top priorities are to improve the academic outcomes of all students who attend our schools and attend the charter schools that we authorize. That's the first anchor goal. The second anchor goal is to become financially stable so that we are a public institution that is able and capable of sustaining ourselves. And if we don't take action, particularly around our finances, we will not be able to sustain ourselves as a public institution.
But can you do both? Can you have the kind of outcomes that you're looking for when you have to either make cuts or figure out how to spend money differently?
We think we can, and that's part of the process of prioritizing the work. And that's why I thought it was important not to put everything under the sun into this plan, but put those things that are evidence-based or based in facts or have been proven empirically to work from research and really redirect the resources that we have in order to implement those things like early literacy that becomes extremely important or focus on graduation rates or to have the systems and structures in place that allow us to operate more efficiently and effectively.
I don't want to spend the whole hour talking about money, but money has been so central to this district, and certainly that if you're looking at the possibility, you know, of $1 billion debt over the next couple of years, you have to make some pretty draconian cuts, it seems to me, in order to head off that problem.
No question, Marty, and that's one thing that we've been trying to explain. And as a matter of fact, before I arrived, while I was going through the interview process, I was looking at all of the documents, and the five-year financial plan was receiving a lot of attention at that time. And this financial plan calls for, as you indicated, a lot of draconian types of things to occur. And the unfortunate part of this is it's not either or. It's all of these things must occur for us to begin operating again in the black. And here is why that's so critical for us, because we've had to, unfortunately, take the unfortunate step to borrow large sums of money in the hundreds of millions of dollars in order to meet our current year operating budget. We no longer have the ability to do that. We've reached our credit limit. Mm. And so now we have to take the more responsible steps of right-sizing the district, of spending within our fiscal means, and having the systems, processes, and structures in place so that we can redirect the resources that we have to students and to schools.
Are there places and people you can go to get more money, whether it's the legislature in Harrisburg, whether it's universities, businesses here in this city?
Yes, all of the above. And as a matter of fact, we have a strategy to generate revenue. And that strategy is really to have a legislative strategy and advocacy both in Harrisburg and with city council and with the mayor's office. And also to look at private funders, philanthropic groups to provide for some assistance. But the problem is, in the meantime, we also have to operate. And we have to operate, and unfortunately, we've had to operate in situations where we are running out of cash. Mm. And so part of this is recreating practices, structures, and strategies to address that issue.
Have you been to Harrisburg yet?
Have not, but we'll be going next week.
They're going next week.
Yes,
I mean,
ma'am.
The reason I ask is this issue about funding for schools in Philadelphia has a long and complicated history. Contentious history at times as well.
No question about it. And that advocacy is important, but equally important is the demonstration of efficiency and the demonstration that we're actually being good stewards of taxpayer money and that we're not wasting the money on things just because they're new and innovative, but we're doing things that work. We're making some hard decisions here in Philadelphia. And we hope that will help individuals to be more inclined to fund the school district.
Over the last number of years, something like 60,000 students have left the district to attend charter schools in this city. Do you think that's sort of reached its maximum? I mean, obviously, these are parents that are exerting a kind of choice that they didn't have before.
These are parents who are exerting choice. And unfortunately, many of the schools that are identified for closure have schools inside of those neighborhoods or students from those neighborhoods who are making these choices. Many of their parents are already voting with their feet. And they're already selecting their schools by the schools that they think are safer, cleaner, not in disrepair, and are offering students the types of opportunities that they would need to either be employed or into college. The district has to become more competitive in that space as well, and that's why we can't continue to spend money on empty seats. Instead, we need to be spending money to make sure that we have safe environments for children, that we have programs that educate the whole child, like art and music, health, and make sure that students have greater access to things that prepare them for the work world, career and technical education, or college.
And I do want to talk about the school closures, but do you see the district then in competition with charter schools? And we should say, like the district, there are good charter schools and there are not so good charter schools. In fact, looking at scores, while some have done better than the district, a lot of them have done either the same or in certain cases worse than the district.
And I think that dynamic exists anywhere in the country where there are large numbers of charter schools. And I do not see us in competition with charters. Here is the thing that we must do, however. We must instead become a choice or become an option when parents are making options about where to send their children. Right now, unfortunately, the district becomes a default option for individuals who don't get to choose something else. Mm. And we want parents who are making selections for whatever those reasons are to also select their district, our district schools. And if we did nothing, Marty, unfortunately, we would be looking at a continuation of the individuals who are leaving our district and moving into other types of schools that they think are that they think are better operated, better supported, resourced more heavily. And we want to discontinue that so that individuals, when they choose, are making choices for the district schools.
But do you think those schools are actually better than the district schools, or that the district schools have a kind of bad rap that maybe isn't as deserved as some believe it is?
Well, I think that it's a little of both. And I do think that in some cases, we have schools in place right now that are not serving students. And we have large percentages of students who are not reading at grade level. And that is even in places where schools are very small. In some places, we have schools that were built for over 1,000 students with a couple of hundred students in them. And even in those places, only 10 to 15% of the students are proficient at grade level in reading and mathematics. That's not a school district that is serving the students in every single school. And I think that we have to stop thinking about this as school closings, but what does every seat look like when we open in the fall with all of the schools that are remaining? And what is better at those places that are not available now?
But for, I think, the individual parent and their child, as far as they're concerned, and you've identified something like 37 schools to be closed over time, for them, that's a school closure. That's the school that they won't be – that's the building they won't be attending.
That's correct. And one of the things that I think is really important is the building, as you just described. And we and these conversations are difficult everywhere in the country. It's not just here in Philadelphia. But – because people are attached to these buildings and attached to these institutions that represent where many individuals attended school. However, buildings don't teach. Individuals teach. And having high-quality individuals who are standing in front of students, what makes the primary difference for students in their educational outcomes. And so part of our plan is to make sure that regardless of where a child attends school, that they will have access to a high-quality education.
How much money do you think would be saved by closing all those schools over time?
If we were, we would save $28 million a year for the next 5 years,
and
on average.
On average. Yeah. Is that just because these buildings are expensive to heat and the sort of management of these particular buildings?
Yes. It's there are management types of issues, and they are expensive to heat and utility costs. They are also individuals who are – there will be individuals who are also reduced. And so the staffs would be reduced at these respective schools, not teachers, but other staff members who provide support. Teachers will generally follow students. Class sizes will not grow as a result of this. We will use the same formula that we currently have to support classrooms, but other support staffs will – be eliminated from many of the schools.
We're almost up on a break here, but I know that I guess you got an earful recently about this decision to close some of these schools. Were those fair criticisms from your perspective?
Oh, no question. I mean, and it's not I actually don't take this, I mean, and many of the criticism personally. I do think, though, that part of this process is a process that encourages and creates a lot of fear, anxiety, anger, frustration, and then it's how we are able to provide that information. We're not stubborn about the recommendations. We just know that we need to end with a certain savings amount. If individuals will have better recommendations, then we are open to those. But the important thing is that we save that amount of money.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Our guest is William Height. He's the new superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia and recently came out with a action plan for the school district. We're talking about his plans for Philadelphia, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Montgomery School, an independent co-ed day school for pre-K through grade 8, supports WHYY. Montgomery School believes that when children find joy in learning, they are forever inspired to explore their world and are best prepared to succeed in their educational pursuits and beyond. An open house will be held on their Chester Springs campus Saturday, January 12th at 10 a.m. Details at montgomeryschool.org. Montgomery School, inspired to explore, prepared to succeed. Montgomery School supports WHYY.
Next time in Studio 360, what's the creative project you've been meaning to do for years?
This year, I will write a short story every month.
We're going to make it happen in 2013.
I've decided it's about time I fulfilled my promise.
The pressure is on.
And I'm resolving to get it done in 2013.
Your creative New Year's resolutions next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
2 years ago, Daniel Hernandez Jr. was hailed as a hero. He rushed to the aid of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot in broad daylight.
I appreciate the sentiment. I must humbly reject the use of the word hero because I am not one.
We look back on that tragic day in Tucson and to what's next for some of the people involved next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. And if you're just joining us, Philadelphia School Superintendent William Height is our guest. We're talking about his goals for public education in the city, his ideas about how we might achieve them. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Are you concerned, though, with some of these school closures that will be another reason to leave the district, that someone might choose a charter over the public school system?
Oh, no question about it. And that does become a concern for my staff and I as we think about this work moving forward. However, it's one of the reasons why we have to be concerned about the remaining seats, so that those seats represent for our children something that is not available now. And so we have to ensure that our buildings are safe. Mm-hmm. We have to assure that they are well maintained. We have to ensure that students have access to rigorous types of courses and courses that prepare them for the world of work or for college. And so these have to be components that exist in every school that's remaining in our district.
This is a very basic question, but if a student is attending a different school that might be farther away, are there transportation issues? Or even in some neighborhoods in the city, it's risky to be out on the streets walking to and fro to school.
Yes, and that's one of the things that we're analyzing as we are going from school to school. And as a matter of fact, we are beginning to develop school-based plans for every school that will be receiving new students. And those school-based plans will be specific to that area, those neighborhoods, and those communities. And those plans will deal with things like safety, safe corridors to school, the types of programs that are available at the school, and the type of staff that are needed to provide support. We've actually built into the plan money for transportation, because in some cases, some students will be moving from being walkers to riders because they will have to cross unsafe intersections.
I noticed in this report, obviously the focus on academic achievement, a greater learning, early childhood education, but something that you describe as academic tenacity. And I know another word for that is grit. I mean, is developing a kind of determination, I guess, among children to learn things.
No question about it. And when we know that there has been a lot of talk about the Common Core, which is a new curriculum that has been adopted by 47 states, and that Common Core, what we know about that is that it's exposing students to more complex texts, if you will. So they're having to read things that are a lot more complex than what they've been reading in the past. They've also had to write based on and tie the writing back to the evidence inside of the text, if you will. And so that's going to take students not giving up because the text is too complex. Instead, we're going to have to help students struggle through some of those materials in order to do it enough to become more comfortable with it. And so this notion of tenacity, resilience, persistence is not giving up when something gets too difficult. And as parents, we tend to want to run in and rescue our young people so that they don't struggle. And many of the colleges and universities will say, but that part of that struggle is absolutely necessary to develop the types of skills, particularly around persistence, you called it grit,
yep,
that students will need in order to be successful in colleges.
Why do you think, and I think it's something like 50% of students in Philadelphia in the public school system are not at grade level. Why do you think that is?
I think that there are a host of things. And I think primarily there are a wholesale lack of expectations for many of our students. And many of our students, based on their backgrounds, are predisposed to falling into certain types of groups. And I think that there are too many people who are working with their children who don't believe that all children can succeed at very high levels, which means that we have to ask them to do more complex types of things. We have to expose them to opportunities to problem solve and think critically and do project-based types of learning. And for some of our students, because we want to run in and rescue them and make things easy for them, we don't expose them to the type of learning opportunities and the type of learning environment that really provides a push for many of our students. That's on one hand. On the other hand, we haven't a focus on literacy has been piecemeal. And not that, and I'm not criticizing that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that we have to think more holistically about literacy and think about it more from a perspective of pre-K through 12th grade, where skills actually build and develop off of each one. And then the third thing I would say is just we always talk about accountability, but when you unpack a lot of the things that many school districts do around the country, accountability is the part that's generally missing.
And, is that teacher accountability?
Well, it's everybody accountability.
Parent accountability.
Right. It's everybody accountability in terms of understanding what our students need, understanding what they know already, understanding their desires, understanding the types of things that they want to be exposed to, understanding where they're having difficulties learning. Those we haven't been very good at that. And so part of this plan is really to have those metrics or metrics in place that allow us almost to the day to analyze where our students are versus where we think they should be at any given time.
We've had teachers who have called into the show. We've done shows about education I don't know how many times. But one of their concerns or one of the concerns that I've heard is that students come to school, they're not ready. They've never held a book. They can't sit still. They maybe didn't have breakfast. I know there are breakfast programs. But that some children are just unprepared for academic work, for schoolwork.
It is no question about it. And so part of what our work should be as a district is then how do we help the community at large actually address some of these types of challenges. What we know works is access to early childhood opportunities for many of the families. Why does that work? Is because we provide for those families then the types of things that parents who understand what children need, particularly at the early years, are doing naturally. And so part of access to early childhood types of programs, pre-kindergarten, Head Start, making those programs more available to many of our citizens, I think, is a part. It's a start there. And then carrying on those practices as those children move through first grade, second grade, third grade.
Does that cost extra money to do that? And I agree with you. Early childhood education can set the foundation for lifelong learning.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm also thinking about prenatal care for many. And so, yes, it does cost extra money, or it does cost money, but it's also monies that we are now directing to other things. And these are things that you can do with support from programs like Title I. That are already working or should be working for many of these students. And so this would be an example of where we would redirect resources so that it's focused on those areas. The other part of this is really looking at how other agencies who are in and across the city and the Commonwealth could also become a part of the support structures and really marshaling those resources into some of our communities with the most significant needs.
Have you found interest for that? I realize you've only been here a couple of months, but is there interest in coordinating with the district on some of these issues?
We actually have, and we're thrilled that we have quite a few agencies that have begun that coordination already. And we actually started a division of student services, and that division is really designed to provide all of the supports to students that are non-academic. So it deals with the family court system, mental health, behavior health, the health department, and many other agencies in the city that can also be a support mechanism for us.
You had mentioned the importance of safe schools, and I think that's everything that every student, every parent would want. But I noticed, I think it was last year, there was something like 20,000 students who were suspended over the year. I mean, and out of a district of 143,000, that's a lot of students.
And that is a very significant number. I was with a group yesterday at West Philadelphia. It was a student leadership group. And the student leadership group was really talking about ways in which we could provide additional training to individuals who could better work with them. And so it was interesting that the students were talking about things like restorative practice, like peer mediation, positive behavior intervention. And here's what they said. They said that, you know, with the power of restorative practice is that it teaches us to change our behavior. If we're just being suspended, then there's no guarantee that when we return and we're faced with the same set of challenges or issues that we won't react the same way if we haven't had any discussion about how do we change our behavior moving forward. These were 9th and 10th graders who were sharing this with us yesterday. And so I think the importance and the power of actually providing students with the opportunity to actually mediate some of the conflict, create anti-bullying types of things, but really begin to establish these relationships with students that allow us to determine what we need to support them with and for based on their specific situations.
Mm. And that's William Hite. He's the new superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. He came to Philadelphia after a long career in education and has issued a blueprint for the district. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Before I get some callers in, I do want to talk about teachers. Your report talks about professionalizing teachers. You talk about giving, I guess, teachers more voice. But I also know that you're going to have to ask for some givebacks, whether it comes to salaries or benefits. And on top of that, you want to attract really good teachers to this city. That's a lot to ask. And some might say, if you're asking for givebacks, can you get the kind of teacher cooperation and the quality of teachers that you say you need?
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is really important is that when you talk to groups of teachers, and while money is important, money is not why they're teaching. And I'm not suggesting that we pay teachers less. In fact, I want to pay teachers as much as we possibly can, and I think we should communicate a completely different message about the professionalizing of teaching. However, many of our highly effective teachers aren't in this, and they don't remain in this because of financial reasons. They remain in it because they feel like that they're making a difference in the lives of students. And these individuals are working hours on end to support students. They look at their work through the outcomes of students, and they talk with their colleagues mm-hmm. about their practice and improving their practice. And so
we want to reward them?
No question we want to reward them. But by the same token, this is the short-term challenges are the fiscal situation that we find ourselves in. Hopefully, if we're able to stabilize the district and move beyond this, then we can recreate structures that will provide and incentivize certain types mm-hmm. of behaviors with their professional teachers. But this is, I hope, what is a temporary solution to a very significant mm-hmm. fiscal problem. And this is not just teachers that we're asking for concessions from, but it's every adult in our system.
You also want some form of teacher accountability, I'm assuming, for the kind of job that they do. And one of the critiques of that is that if you don't have the kinds of tools to do your job, then is it fair to have a kind of accountability? Is that a fair concern, critique?
Oh, I think. And I think about the I subscribe to the principle of reciprocal accountability. And it says that for every ounce of accountability we expect, we owe an ounce of support and development. And so I think you also have to equip individuals with the types of things that we want to see. And it's incumbent upon us to develop those skills in individuals before we hold individuals mm-hmm. accountable for their actions. But once we do that, I do think that accountability is extremely important, and not just at the teacher level, but it has to be at every level in our district.
Including your level?
Including mine, especially mine.
Let me get, looks like Justin from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us. And Justin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. That would be number 5. We'll try to get Justin on. Yes, there we go. Hi, Justin. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. The phones are misbehaving again. Again, we will be taking some calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY once we get our phone system up and running. You've also talked about the possibility of a longer school day, perhaps some schedule changes, some staffing changes. Do you think there should be a longer school day?
Well, I think that we should use as much time as we possibly can in order to teach our students longer. The longer school day part of this is much harder now when you talk about cutting revenues and concessions. And however, I think that we have to spend a lot more time educating children, and we are asking educators to do a lot more in within shorter days. And so yes, I am advocating for a much longer school day, but that's something that is down the road in terms of what we'll be able to do.
Let me try Justin again. Justin from Center City, Philadelphia. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
That sounds better.
Yes, it does. Go ahead.
For taking the call. I spent some time as a student teacher in the Philadelphia School District recently, and I was particularly interested in the kids that were labeled as unruly, the kids that no teacher wanted in their classroom and everything. I sort of made it my policy to go out of my way and make friends with them and sort of pay some individualized attention with them. And I found, without exception, they were among the sharpest, most intelligent, obviously most energetic, and most motivated kids in the room. And one of them, one of the reasons he was so unruly is that he had asked for a seat at the front of the class and the teacher had just written him off. My sense is that if these kids were able to get some more individualized attention, a lot of these problems would simply evaporate. I mean, I have obviously much smaller classes in mind when I say that, but I was wondering what the superintendent has in the way of concrete ideas for bringing these students into the education process instead of simply excluding them, which is the typical MO.
Justin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. William Hyde, about a minute before a second break, but go ahead.
Sure, and I think Justin hit on one of the essential issues for us, and what we are finding, even with students who drop out of school, they're dropping out because they don't see themselves, they don't see a solution for themselves inside of the current system or the current district. And just as Justin reached out to these young people, we could have other individuals who reach out to these young people and sometimes just talk to them and become an advocate for them or a supporter for them or someone who encourages them. And that's something that we can do inside of our current structure. And it's not students who, for some of us, we believe too many students are predisposed to being problem children, when if we thought about it a different way, what is it that we can do to make those young people interested in the classroom or their educational experience? I think we would see different results.
The idea of a teacher doing perhaps what Justin was doing?
No question about it.
And that's William Hyde, our guest today on Radio Times. We will take that very short break and then get back to our conversation and our callers. He's the new superintendent of the school district of Philadelphia. He's got big plans for this city. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents British Isles of Wonder, Friday, January 11th in Verizon Hall. Bagpipes ring through the Highland air, a call to arms or adventure. The spirited pipes, drums, and dancers of Scotland's Black Watch and the band of the Scots Guards join forces to celebrate the music and culture of England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. British Isles of Wonder, Friday, January 11th in Verizon Hall. Tickets available at KimmelCenter.org. As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South were suddenly freed from slavery. Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. We'll talk with Levine on the next Fresh Air. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Neoconservative Bill Kristol is said to be the architect of the Republican Party. What are his plans to rebuild after the past election and fiscal cliff battle? Also, Hugo Chavez is expected to be sworn in this week as president of Venezuela, but he's sick in Cuba. What happens now? That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And again, the Philadelphia School Superintendent William Height is our guest. We're talking about his goals for public education in the city, his ideas about how we might achieve them. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Justin's call got me to ask you, William Height, about whether you were one of those unruly students. Were you?
Unfortunately, I was. And as a matter of fact, yesterday I talked about being with the students from West Philadelphia High School, and the students did an activity. And in this activity, the students had us all stand up in a circle, and they said, "Step into the circle if you've ever been suspended." And they were shocked when I stepped into the circle. And so they took from that several thoughts. And one thought was that it doesn't matter that sometimes you may make mistakes, but it's your ability to rebound from those mistakes that really define who you are. And they also said that, see, if our superintendent, he's become the superintendent and he was suspended, so that means that there's still opportunities for us. So I thought that that was unique to have that experience with them yesterday.
And why were you suspended from school?
I was suspended because I was in the back of the classroom doing harassing the teacher and doing things that I should not have been doing.
Were you mouthing off?
No, we did something that was unfortunately worse than that. We put a chair with three legs where she sits, and she sat in it and fell over. So
So a well-deserved suspension.
No question about it.
And did you learn your lesson? Quickly, shortly thereafter?
I did learn it eventually, yes.
So were you a slow learner?
No, I was fine. I was fine. After my parents got to me after that, it was, you know, I didn't play around like that anymore.
Let me see what Matt from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I haven't heard any discussion of some of Philadelphia's excellent schools, which are actually also being threatened with funding cuts. I have a daughter at GAMP in South Philadelphia, and I've received a letter that concerns the availability of school busing next year. And I have a son at the Science Leadership Academy, and he doesn't have a language teacher. So what's going to be done to model on the successes of Philadelphia's school systems and spread that? And how can that happen with these funding problems?
It's a fair question. Matt, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. And some of the highest performing schools in the district, in the city of Philadelphia, are district schools.
And Masterman being one.
Well, Masterman was just recognized as having the highest average SAT scores of any schools. And I've seen a whole host of fabulous schools that we have in our district. And to the caller's point, we also, it's one reason why we have to get our arms around the financial picture, because our ability to operate financially just doesn't impact schools that are in need of turnaround. It also impacts every other school as well. And so it's one reason why the ensuring financial stability becomes extremely important to us as a district, because we want to create more environments like the ones that was described by the caller.
But he's concerned about transportation. He's saying there isn't, you know, there's a science teacher that's missing, so to speak.
Yeah, no question about it. And we've had many of our schools that have had to do a lot more with less. I was at Greenfield Elementary School on the same day that I visited another school that operates outside of our district, one of our charters. And at Greenfield, it was the principal and his secretary. And the principal was all over the school that day working like the Dickens to provide support. It's a tremendously successful school. Hmm. And then I go to a different school, and at that school there are at least 12 individuals in addition to the teachers who are serving students. Unfortunately, many of our parents are selecting for those types of schools because they see all of these supports in place. And we have to become a district that also provides those types of supports. We cannot do it in this economic environment. And it's, once again, one of the reasons why, if we do not ensure our financial stability, then it makes it very hard for us to continue things like transportation for some of the specialty centers like GAMP, or making sure that every classroom has a certified teacher to teach language or math or science or any of the other core areas.
Let me see what looks like Dr. Weisberg from West Philadelphia has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Dr. Valerie Weisberg, and I work for School Therapeutic Support Services at one of the closing schools in Philadelphia. Many students are exposed to community violence, poverty, and other environmental stressors that may lead to emotional needs and behavioral needs. So what is your plan to prepare teachers or train teachers to work effectively with the increasing number of students with these behavioral and emotional needs?
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, William.
Yes, great. Thank you, Dr. Weisberg, for the question. And one of the things that we've been doing, even this year, we've been training our principals on some of the safety types, safety-related issues that that should be a part of every school's plan. And we've trained all of the principals there. We're going to begin that training with teachers as well, and we're going to start with the receiving schools first and really look at training for the receiving schools and using some of these other agencies like what was just described in order to help us with this.
The other thing, training teachers directly to deal with children that might have some problems in the classroom.
Training them to identify the problems first and foremost, and then training and then providing information about the types of resources that are available that can provide assistance and support to help us address the students with those problems. And it's one reason why we're looking at all of the other agencies that can help us with this work as well. The other thing that I think is really important that is that has kind of gone untold through this whole process, more than half, about 55% of our high school students now are traveling outside of their boundaries to attend high schools. So they're already making a choice outside of their neighborhood schools in order to do this. And these are all of the students who are remaining in their schools who have not selected a charter or other means to be educated. So of all of the high school students who remain in that district, 55% of them are not choosing to attend their boundary school, but instead a school outside of their neighborhood.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. I noticed in your report, and others have said, that sixth grade is just a very critical year in a child's education. And oftentimes, that's if they're going to drop out, that's the sort of beginning of I guess, signs that a child is not going to stay in school. What can you do at sixth grade to retain that student?
Yeah, and it's not only, and we begin to track that information at sixth grade, and we have to look at certain factors, but it begins long before that. And it actually manifests itself students begin making decisions at sixth grade, but they begin to become disenfranchised long before the sixth grade. And you can begin to tell when students are late to school, they're missing school, they are being reluctant about doing anything in the class. And sixth grade is unfortunately where many students begin to say, you know, maybe I got three more years and I'm going to choose to do something else. But once again, this is a part of the training that we just talked about, and making sure that we have educators who understand the types of signs to look for. There's also some empirical types of data that we can look for with students on track to graduate. And those are things like attendance, behavior, and grades in classrooms. And those factors can actually give us great information about students who will either remain on track or not. Now, the key question is then, what do we do about and do with that information and making sure that we're providing the additional interventions and or supports to those students?
It is a simple thing. One of the things this report says is you want to make a school a place where people want to be, I guess, whether they're a student, a custodian, a teacher, a principal, anyone else working in that building.
Yeah, no question about it.
Let me see what Kia from Southwest Philadelphia is saying. Kia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. That would be number one.
Hello.
Hi, Kia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. So, yes, I have three children that are in the public school system and one that attends a charter. And so my question is, would Dr. Height consider a moratorium on school closings until an analysis is done to see how those closures would affect the neighborhoods and the areas where the schools are being closed.
And Kia, does that include one of the schools where one of your kids attends?
No, actually, my children don't attend, but we do live in a neighborhood where Shaw is on the list to be closed, and so that's right around the corner from me. And that means the children from that school will go over into my children's school where they currently attend.
I hear you. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, William. Hi.
Yeah, so the and I've had several requests to consider a moratorium, and it is my responsibility to operate a school district that both improves the outcomes of students and operates with financial stability and sustainability in mind. And with that, it would not be responsible for me to exercise a moratorium on my recommendation to close schools. I've made that recommendation because we have no other choices. And if, in fact, we're going to provide for more effective educational options for our students, then we have to get our arms around our finances. And the school closures are just one of many parts to that. The other thing is this, and I know the caller mentioned Shaw, and I've actually been to Shaw, and I visited that school. It's a wonderful administrator at that school. It's in a building that was built for 1,100 students, and it has 193 students in it. And that is that doesn't describe a scenario where we are operating efficiently and effectively on behalf of children. And so that kind of speaks to the problems that we're trying to solve. Now, I've made the recommendations. The moratorium comment would have to go to the SRC, who would have to take the action on the set of comments. But I have made the recommendation. I'm not stubborn about the recommendations, but nonetheless, we're making those recommendations and not taking it lightly. I understand how significant this is, especially for a city of neighborhoods. But by the same token, I also want to communicate that we are out of options in terms of what we can do in order to generate the type of revenue we need to increase and improve the academic options for all of our students.
Has the SRC, the School Reform Commission, indicated one way or the other whether they agree with your recommendations?
They have not, and it's not designed to do that until later in March.
Later in March.
Yes.
Let's see what Lynn from Queen Village has to say. Lynn, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I'm really concerned about early childhood education, as Dr. Height said he is. What I'm concerned about is that kindergarten and some preschool programs have become much more like first grade, and the children have to sit down and be quiet, when we know that the things that help kids succeed in school are ability to speak with one another, ability to problem solve, and those things come from play, not from sitting down and being quiet. How can we change things back or make things better for children who come to school not as well prepared as others?
Well, Lynn, I have to say William Height looks like he's about to jump out of his chair. Go ahead.
Lynn, we can hire you, first of all, to help us with that. But as a new grandfather, and I have a one-year-old grandson, and I watch my one-year-old grandson actually investigate. He opens stuff. He smells stuff. He tastes stuff. He listens to stuff. He generates actions that will generate reactions. And I worry that when he goes off to school, we're going to make him sit down. And as a young black boy, if he is not used to sitting in place for that time, then we're going to classify him as special ed or something, or behavior problem. And you're right. We have to get back to creating the environments that allow a child to allow a child's brain to develop as it has been designed to. That is through inquiry. That is through investigation. That is through doing the types of things that you just described. And that becomes a training thing for us. And this is not about creating more things that represent school, but these are creating the types of environments where children are able to be successful. And these are environments that allow for students to explore and to engage in their own learning process. And quite frankly, it's why programs like Montessori is very popular here. And we have to think about how do we create early childhood options for parents that allow children to do just what you described.
But is there too much testing, too much you know, preparing for tests within our system, whether it's Philadelphia or any system across the country?
Absolutely it is. I mean, absolutely it is. And not that – and I talk about accountability. And not that I am discounting the need to know where students are relative to where they should be, but it can't become all about tests or all about preparing for a test. The students' preparation for a test should be a natural byproduct of what and how they're learning in classrooms. And that should be something that those students do as a part of their normal learning. And it should be through our observation and our ongoing evidence in what we see and observe with those children while they're with us that gives us information about what they are getting and what they're not getting.
And just 30 seconds here, but how will we know if your ideas have succeeded?
We will say, and I will add, that we have metrics for all of the action items that are on here. Some of them we're still developing. We're going to make those metrics very public, and so that at any given time, anyone in our district, anyone in their community, anyone in their city can go to a place, look at these metrics to understand how we are doing. This is also version one of a plan that is likely to evolve, because as we find things that work better, we plan to utilize those.
Well, William Hite, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And he's the new superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. In fact, if you go to our Facebook page, you can see what our guest looks like. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoyne. Thank you for those phone calls, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.